Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello, welcome in another week of the program. Glad to have you with us. We're live from the Big X Studios in Jeffersonville. And, you know, we've all agreed, I think, that if sports, at least pro sports right now, start to come back, there are going to be some interesting situations. There likely are going to be some outbreaks, especially more so with baseball because they're not in a bubble. And we're still waiting to see exactly how true the bubble is in Orlando. But so far, so good there. However, we've reached our first real coronavirus interference of pro sports since the restart with Major League Baseball. I don't know if you've been following along a little earlier today, but 8 additional Miami Marlins players and 2 coaches tested positive for COVID-19. That, I believe, is now 14 cases within the Miami Marlins organization, which means tonight's game, their home opener in Miami against the Baltimore Orioles, it has been canceled. And Philadelphia, which is where Miami played last night, the game that they had scheduled tonight against the Yankees, it has been canceled, according to Ken Rosenthal. So this is the first real interference, the first real, I don't want to call it shutdown because it really only involves maybe a couple teams, a couple games, I think, from everything that's out there. All the other Major League Baseball games, at least as we know now, will be played tonight. But you have to wonder, will something like this eventually shut down sports again until we're done with the coronavirus, until there is a vaccine? Or will this just become common in pro sports, maybe even in college and high school sports, where, you know what, the Marlins, they're unavailable for a couple days. They're unavailable for a couple weeks. Who knows what this could look like moving forward. But I think this morning, today, with the Marlins, maybe the first of many, if sports are going to continue, that is, interferences, inconveniences, schedule changes, game cancellations, game postponements, whatever you want to call it, I think it's the first of many. And again, the Marlins kind of at the center of this thing. But again, I think it's great that the Phillies, it was at their place last night. There was probably little interaction among most positions and most players last night at the games, but probably smart to do so. And obviously, Miami has to cancel their game. I don't think there's any other way around that. But one other thing, I've watched some baseball since it's been back. It's been different. It's been odd with no fans in the stands. We talked about that some last week. But probably more than anything, I'm a little amazed. I'm amazed that the MLB and the Players Association have let this go. And maybe they'll revert course here once we get a couple weeks into the season. But most games I've watched, or most highlights on SportsCenter that I've watched, when there's a home run or a big run comes across the plate, there's a lot of interaction in the dugout among players. There's no social distancing. They're slapping hands, in some cases hugging, you know, all sorts of things. And again, it's got to be an example there, I think, for what sports at a college and high school level have to look like. And you're not going to be able to do some of those things because you think, well, in the NBA bubble, they're together, they're as a team. Probably not as big a deal, possibly, but the more distance you can create, I guess the better overall chance you've got, even though they are intermingling and touching and sweating on each other during the games themselves. But in baseball, obviously, you know, that's not really the case. And so the distance there, the non-touching there, is a big deal, and you would think that they would be a little more mindful of that. Or, again, it's such a natural rhythm of the game or natural thing of the game that they probably don't think about it until someone above them, their manager, their organization, the Players Association, sets the record straight. So that'll be interesting to follow as well. But I think with the Marlins, you know, last night I didn't watch that specific game or look at their dugout the whole game to see who was touching who or congratulating who or high-fiving who. But you wonder the interactions just in that game last night with a number of positive dugout of cases in that dugout, what exactly that looked like last night as well. So this will be interesting to follow today, but I unfortunately think if sports are to continue, and I hope that they do, if it's somewhat safe, I think we're going to continue to see things like this interfere with schedules and change things around. And I think we just got to get used to being pretty flexible at this time when it comes to sports and really when it comes to so many things that we are so used to doing in daily life. Let's take a look at today's show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we have our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We've got some recruiting stuff, a new offer out from Indiana to a player, also a commitment from the state of Indiana of a player that you'll know, and to take a look just kind of at COVID-19 effects over the weekend on college football and sports. A couple teams have quarantined or paused their workouts like Indiana has, at least football workouts. A couple teams also, a conference has delayed its football season to the spring of 2021. And a look at Romeo Langford. He had a nice game last night after missing one of the scrimmages earlier in the weekend, and we'll talk about that coming up today as well. That's the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget to stop by Honey Baked Ham for their new dinner package deals that are now being offered. You can dine in, you can pick up, and curbside service, it's still available at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at today's Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news, brought to you by Zaxby's with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. And I tell you what, a number of things to get to. Let's start with some recruiting stuff. First, for Indiana, they have offered another player. This is a member of the class of 2022. His name is Avery Brown, and he received an offer from Indiana yesterday as well. Don't have a lot of information on him, but another name to track, another name to follow in the IU recruiting, which, again, lots of new offers have went out here over the last couple weeks, both 2021, but primarily getting even younger with 2022 players, some in-state guys, but a lot of out-of-state guys as well that Indiana is tracking in these next two classes, 2021 and 2022. Also, a big high school basketball name committed to Stetson over the weekend. His name is Luke Brown. He plays for Blackford. He's a prolific scorer. At one point in his career, he was set possibly to be on a track to break Damon Bailey's scoring record in the state of Indiana. He's kind of been part of a resurgence of Hartford City, a very small town in eastern Indiana that fell on some hard times. Their high school sports hadn't been great, hadn't been well attended, but when he came in as a freshman and a new coach and some other players as well, kind of brought a reemergence of the sports in that small town. And of course, we know how Indiana loves its sports and supports its high school team still. So he's kind of been a good story. Greg Doyle has followed him closely. In fact, Greg broke his commitment on Saturday night. But playing mid-major basketball is Luke Brown, a great shooter, great scorer, and he'll be playing, if the season happens, at New Albany in the month of December for a game against the Bulldogs. Again, Luke Brown, I don't think anyone, for the most part, thought he was a high major, an Indiana, a Big Ten-type player. But at the mid-major level, with his scoring prowess and his abilities and his shooting ability as well, probably a really good fit for him, and neat to see another player in the senior class, the upcoming senior class in our state, already commit to a Division I basketball program. Taking a look at some other COVID-19 effects on sports, Rutgers, they have quarantined their entire football program after 6 positive COVID-19 tests in its latest weekly testing cycle. That's at Rutgers. And you follow that up with an announcement on Friday from Michigan State that they have quarantined a number of their football players and will isolate them for 14 days as voluntary workouts now paused at Michigan State as well. I think that's 4 or 5, including Indiana, 4 or 5 Big Ten schools now that at some point, either currently or previously, have had to stop their voluntary workouts, have had to quarantine things and shut things down. Also, a small college conference that involves Hanover and a number of other Division III schools in the state of Indiana, the Heartland Collegiate Athletic Conference, they announced over the weekend that they are going to go ahead with some fall sports seasons, golf, tennis, and cross country, which you could see there can be some social distancing there, obviously. But football, soccer, and volleyball, they have voted to move those three sports that are normally in the fall to the spring of 2021. So we're seeing some small college conferences do it. We've seen some Division I conferences do it. We've seen some outright cancel fall sports altogether. Just a wild and wacky time. It doesn't matter the location. It doesn't matter the level. It doesn't matter if it's D1, D3, if you're on scholarship, if you're paying your way. All sorts of athletes right now are being affected by some of the changes caused by COVID-19. Also, looking into Kentucky, lots of wondering there what's going to happen with high school sports, specifically football. We have a lot of the same questions in Indiana, but so far, you know, when your biggest, I think it's the biggest, it has to be the biggest, the Jefferson County Public School System is going to start with their virtual programming, their virtual learning for the start of the year. Are they going to be able to play sports? What if they all don't play sports? That's a number of teams that will affect a number of districts and regions and the way that tournaments are set up in the state of Kentucky. So a lot of interest there. Other schools, the Lexington area schools, Fayette County in Kentucky, they will also start on virtual learning. And to be quite honest, their governor, because of some numbers going up, and numbers have went up in Indiana obviously as well, but because of some numbers going up, their governor saying today, on Monday, he's going to make an announcement on some further restrictions. And you wonder, I think there's a rumor, could that involve a general pushback of public or of high school, all schooling, all education, a start date that nothing can get going until then, until we hopefully get this number under control. So then the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, they've got a board of control meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m., which could come on the heels of any announcement that the governor in Kentucky makes today. So it sounds like this is going to be another big week. I think it'll be a big week for college football, finding more out about what the Big Ten schedule could look like, what the season as a whole could look like. I think it'll be a big week for Kentucky high school sports for those interested in that. And I think it's another important week to track what goes on locally and in our state as well, and also follow maybe not sports this week, but what other schools do as they get another week closer to starting. A lot of schools have bumped it back. Some schools have went to a hybrid schedule. Some are going to start online or not in person. Going to be interesting to see what other schools and other big cities, Evansville, Fort Wayne, the region up in northwestern Indiana, what do they do? And do they allow their kids to play sports if they're not in school? Those are things that I'll be following as we get closer to the start of fall sports and, of course, official football practices on August 3rd in Indiana, still a go as things stand right now. Also, Romeo Langford, our final headline today, he's been playing for the Celtics now that they're back in action in the Orlando bubble. A couple scrimmages so far for the Celtics, one on Friday, and Romeo did not play. You didn't see him on the bench. He wasn't in the game, but a tweet after the game from the Celtics said he had a stomach condition, probably could have been there, probably could have played or been on the bench at least, but the Celtics felt it was best to hold him out of that. So Romeo did not get any time on Friday. He did play yesterday in their game, and he had 9 points coming off the bench as Boston won 117-103 over Phoenix in their Sunday scrimmage down in Orlando. 3 for 6 from the field, 1 for 3 from three-point land, 2 for 5 from the free throw line, and he played a total of 12 minutes. He had 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 turnovers, and 1 foul. That's the full Romeo Langford story from his scrimmage game over the weekend as Boston defeated Phoenix. And speaking of that, not sure I said it when going through the lineup earlier, but Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports, he covers the Celtics for Forbes, He's going to join us in this third segment today of our program. So Zach Osterman on IU coming up here in a moment, and then Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports will talk about Romeo, the Celtics, the bubble, the NBA as a whole with Chris when he joins us a little bit later in the show today. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We will head to a commercial break and come back to talk IU football. What's the latest? When will they come out of a pause for voluntary workouts? And a look at the Big Ten. A lot of things pause from a football perspective right now, a time when you really want to see people beginning to ramp up as we get closer to the season. That and more with Zach Osterman next. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Back here on this Monday program, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star with me. We'll talk IU football, maybe a little basketball in this segment as well. But Zach, I know you're a Braves fan, so I know you follow Major League Baseball and are glad the season is back. There are some Braves games for you to follow. But I tell you what, maybe the first interruption of perhaps many, or maybe this is the new normal in pro sports, the Miami Marlins with a number of positives. And their game tonight has been canceled. The game where they played last night, the Phillies have canceled their game against the Yankees tonight. And a bit of an interruption here because of a little breakout within the Marlins organization, both their coaches and players.
Yeah, I mean, this is frankly the concern that I think is going to wind up basically coming into play during whatever the college season looks like, assuming we have one, you know, sort of pre-vaccine. Baseball's not doing a hard bubble, at least my understanding is it's not. And based on the reporting around this Marlins story, which included the news that the Marlins knew about these four positive, well, the initial four positive tests before yesterday's game and never considered not playing it, that suggests that the Marlins do not have, or that baseball does not have kind of a, you know, sort of a red line for saying if you break this number of tests or if you have positive tests, you need to go through this before you can play as a team. You know, this is what it's going to look like if you don't choose to or you're not able to enact a hard bubble, then this is what you risk. And of course I can't begin to know where these players came into contact with the virus, before they tested positive, but the broader point remains, it can move very quickly through a team setting. Of course it can. I think anyone can understand the hows and whys of that. And as it pertains to college sports, you know, where you really probably just can't do a bubble, you know, this is where you're going to run into real trouble, is if one team gets infected and then spreads it to another team, does that shut everybody down for 2 weeks? What happens if in the meantime somebody else gets infected, then all of a sudden your season just kind of goes off the rails? You know, it's going to be very difficult, and I think that certainly the NFL is probably looking at baseball right now, taking some notes. If it's not, it's derelict in its job, but college sports should be too, frankly.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, our guest. Very interesting to see how this plays out. And again, I think that we are all prepared, media, fans, players, coaches, organizations, to see this be something that from time to time, an outbreak here, a number of cases here, and games canceled, games postponed. I do think, Zach, it's going to be interesting to see as we get a little further into the NBA bubble. And I know that we're not even to regular season games just yet, but so far, at least nothing bad has been reported from there. Obviously, there have been some positive cases, especially when players first arrived. But players have now been there for you know, 2-3 weeks by the time they arrived, had to quarantine before entering the bubble. And when you compare the NBA's bubble against the MLB, playing in their home stadiums for the most part, traveling private, traveling by themselves without the public and airplanes, it is going to be interesting to see the difference in this bubble that the NBA has basically invested so much in, to see if it truly does make a difference. And if it does, the sad thing is that it's just impossible for college sports, if it is a fixer for this situation in a non-vaccine time. I don't think it's a possibility for college sports.
No, I don't think it is. You know, I think you can do things to try and sort of limit interactions that you have. And as I think we discussed last week, if colleges independent of athletics wind up going to having to revert fully to online only learning, because I think, you know, any moment like this is probably the minute you start to extend it to higher education, you know, it's hard to see how it, how that goes any better. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Nobody's cheering for colleges to have to shut down. No one's cheering for sports seasons to not happen. Any suggestion to the contrary is just asinine. But, you know, as we talked about last week, the best chance college sports may have for building something of a de facto bubble is if the schools do have to go back to online only, and then maybe you have a little bit more of that opportunity. But, you know, you bring up the NBA. I think you can also look at soccer overseas, where positivity rates were kept extremely low by putting players in a bubble. And it wasn't, I don't believe anyway, in Europe it was a hard bubble. I think it was kind of a bubble, you know, 90-some-odd% of the time with some family interaction allowed, I believe. But, you know, even in the Premier League and in England, where the virus has maybe not been checked as stringently as in some other countries, I think their last round of testing before the end of their season, which just concluded on Sunday, turned up zero positives. And so the point is, the bubbles can work. I think the MLS also, which is doing something of a kind of restart tournament in the bubble down in Orlando while it figures out how it wants to approach the rest of its regular season, kind of moving into the fall. I think they've had zero positives for more than 2 weeks now. So the bubbles can work. You know, I know there was early discussion in baseball of trying to do something like that. It got shut down. You know, now we're in a situation where I think it would be very hard to revert to that, both because of the fact that the season's already started and also because the two states where they talked about doing that, Florida and Arizona, are currently two of the most hard hit states in the country in terms of, you know, COVID positivity rates and daily cases and things like that. But the point is, it can work if you set up the right protocols, if you're careful, if you're smart. But it would be very, very hard to replicate for college.
Yeah, no question. And let's bring it a little closer to home with IU and the Big Ten. Since Indiana's voluntary workouts have been shelved because of COVID-19 positive cases a few weeks ago, I guess a week and a half or so ago, that's when it was shut down, we're seeing other Big Ten programs that are having to do the same. Michigan State on Friday, Rutgers over the weekend as well. I guess the concern there that I have, as we inch closer to thinking more and more about college football in the season, instead of teams, after players have arrived on campus and been tested and maybe had to sit out, instead of more teams not going on a pause, it seems like in the Big Ten at least, the last week or so has been not good for that situation, getting ready for the season. And in a time when you really want to be getting in tip-top shape and beginning to get to some normal based on what the NCAA rules say you can do right now, it seems we're not seeing that at a lot of schools, and in the conference, we're seeing it kind of go backwards, really.
You know, I think the one thing that is just, and again, none of this exists in isolation. The one thing that I think could really make a difference for college is if you enacted a more stringent testing policy. And if you basically just said players have to get tested, you know, no more than once every 2 days and isolated as soon as possible. I don't know if that would even that would work. And I think that, you know, the thing you'd run into again, at least as things stand right now, is that by all accounts, and this is, you know, this is me parroting public health professionals. Of course, this is not my area of expertise, though it has, you know, it's kind of become every sports writer's area of expertise in the last few months, is now our national testing capacity is basically being strained to its limit. And, you know, anecdotally, I know friends who've been quarantining for several days, almost a week, and they still haven't gotten positive, you know, or test results back, or it took them nearly a week to get test results back. And of course, the problem with that is if you can't do a bubble around teams, you know, college teams, then the whole point of testing is to basically isolate infections as quickly as possible and try to keep them from spreading throughout the team such that you have to shut everything down. Because to your point, it's you know, the shutdowns now aren't helpful, but a shutdown during camp is, you know, has triple the impact, because you can't just shut down for 10 days in camp and then ask everybody to come back and be ready for the season on time. You know, that's not safe. Players won't be physically prepared. You'll have injuries. You'll have, you know, I mean, you'll have teams that just aren't ready. And then of course, you know, the worst possible case is having to shut down during the season and either postpone or cancel games. And if that gets, you know, if that becomes a widespread issue, then the season just isn't viable. But the best tool that you've got right now, since you can't put college athletes in a bubble, is to test them as often as possible. But if you can't get test results back for 4 or 5 days, that's not a tool. And if you are taking up testing resources that could be used by healthcare professionals that could, you know, get more rapid responses for individuals who are sick and maybe have to be hospitalized, et cetera, well, I think we can all agree that however much we want sports back, it shouldn't be a priority over public health. And so this then just comes back to the same central theme that it seems like anytime I have this conversation, you know, with you or with anyone else, I come back to, which is just, if we all embraced the small basic things, wash your hands, wear a mask, socially distance, you know, put off your guys weekend in Vegas for a year. Don't go to the pool party, you know, I mean, listen, I'm not going to act like I haven't had friends over for a beer. And you know what we do? I go around, I open my back gate. They walk into my backyard. We stand 8 feet from one another, or we put chairs down around the fire pit. We see each other. It's great. It's fun. Okay, no, I'm not in a bar or a restaurant. That sounds great. But it's finding ways to do that while still being responsible enough that we limit the spread of this. And if we knock this down enough, you know, in Germany, they're already talking about bringing fans back into the stands in games, for soccer games. You know, England completed, all the European leagues have completed or will complete their seasons without any interruption. And again, you look at a country like England wasn't the model for how to defeat the virus early on or the spread of the virus early on. And yet it still found a way to do these things. And if we can embrace just those basics here and maybe make some sacrifices in terms of, you know, the normal routines and habits that we would have otherwise, we can get to a place where testing, you know, only takes a few hours, and maybe college football can do that. And then without obviously pulling resources away from healthcare systems. And then the chances of a season happening grow exponentially. You know, the chances of baseball being able to go through a more uninterrupted season grow exponentially. But it really is one where if we just all pull together and just kind of meet in the middle a little bit and are willing to drink beers in our driveways instead of at bars, et cetera. I'm using that as an example, just of something that I do. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not enjoying a driveway beer every now and then. But it's just, it's being willing to give up on some of the things for now, because there's also compelling evidence to suggest a vaccine isn't very far away. We're talking a matter of months, maybe early next year. Then we can have a lot of these things. Maybe not exactly like we did in the past, but we can still have them. And listen, a baseball game with no fans is a weird experience, but Lord help me if I didn't watch every inning of all three Braves games this weekend and just enjoy the simple pleasure of having a baseball game on in the background on a Sunday night while I cooked dinner or cleaned dishes or did whatever, and just got to have that part of my routine back. We can do it. We can do it. Absolutely. We just all got to kind of meet in the middle on it.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star. Zach, of course, I do want to mention this before we go as well. Some recruiting stuff still going on. Indiana football recently with the commitment. A number of new scholarship offers on the basketball side have went out over the last month and a half or so. Some to 2021 players, guys that will be seniors in high school, but a number to even younger players, class of 2022 guys that will be juniors. It seems now in this upcoming two classes at least that Archie Miller and the staff are really – getting more and more active with out-of-state players. They've got some in-state guys. They've got, obviously, Trey Kaufman and Wesley in South Bend that they are tracking very closely. But it seems that Indiana is, across the board, just involved with a lot of guys from outside its normal footprint right here in the Midwest and definitely outside of the state of Indiana.
Yeah, I mean – you know, it's hard to get a feel for how, I mean, like, you could kind of, and every staff's a little different too, and this is true of both basketball and football. But you kind of get into a rhythm of, like, so for Archie Miller as an example, in a particular class, you know, the offers would maybe be, you know, come a little bit stingy at first, only to the most sort of elite level prospects, the guys that were clearly, like, you know, top line wants, and then maybe a little bit of extra emphasis on the in-state kids, you know, to make sure that those in-state recruiting connections stayed strong, and kids that IU knew it would probably want to recruit and sign if possible at some point, didn't feel ignored or, you know, didn't feel sort of like snubbed or whatever you want to say. And then as you got further down the line and maybe you pick up a couple commits, maybe you lose a couple of those top targets, you start to spread out while at the same time starting, you know, through obviously the April period and then I think certainly the July period to begin the process over again in kind of your next class. It just feels like all that's gotten so corrupted because, you know, I mean, like, I'm kind of switching very abruptly to football. But, you know, IU football would have handed out a round of offers both to rising seniors and rising juniors off of its prospect camps in June. But, of course, they didn't have them. So now you're kind of in this place where if you're a coaching staff, you're balancing a little bit of, okay, we don't want to not be offering anybody because, you know, at some point we're going to need kids to commit. And at some point we're going to be allowed to open the doors back up for visits and things like that. And we can't just pause everything until then, but we don't have this same, you know, sort of raw, you know, evaluation windows, and this is football and basketball, that we would normally have to just get a lot of sort of seeing eye data on kids to make these sorts of decisions. And I think it's kind of been interesting. It feels like it's almost moved differently staff to staff, school to school in terms of how people handle this sort of thing. Now, you know, the advantage I think for football is that, and I'm speaking about IU specifically here, the 2021 class is not expected to be very big. You know, that they've got a couple kids announcing toward the end of this week. Josh Sales from Brownsburg High School in Indiana, and a kid named Maurice Freeman, the safety from Virginia. The impression is IU is in very good position for both of those players. if they were to commit both of those guys, they'd be up to 13 commitments in this 2021 class. And given how few seniors IU has on its roster, I don't think this class will even come near 20 total players. So from a football perspective, they're, you know, this isn't the kind of class where you're going to get hurt by needing quantity and not being able to kind of recruit in that way. And then from a basketball perspective, of course, you know, ultimately you still only have to make sure you're bringing in the right, let's say, three or four guys in a class. And I'm not saying it's easy, but, you know, there's a little bit more wiggle room there because you don't have to worry about big numbers. But it has been interesting to just kind of see the way that things have changed. And I think it will also be interesting in maybe 2 or 3 years to look back and see if there are any trends that we can, you know, we can kind of trace through this. Are there more transfers, for example, because kids maybe committed a little bit more sight unseen, you know, because they weren't allowed the normal recruiting process? Or on the flip side, are there some schools that really landed in all, you know, all sports, but certainly football and basketball, you know, banner classes, even if maybe they weren't the most highly rated because coaches had nothing to do but just break down film. And so they just absolutely, you know, evaluated the death out of these kids, and that helped them make better decisions about who they were recruiting. I don't know, but I am kind of fascinated to get maybe 2 or 3 years down the line from this. Number one, because like everyone else, I'd like this to go away. And number two, I really am interested to kind of see what the fallout effects of all of this are in recruiting, because I think it really could be fascinating.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach, as always, thanks for sticking with me on a number of subjects today. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right, Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, and we'll head to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Boston Celtics and Romeo Langford. He had a nice scrimmage game yesterday. We'll talk about where he's at in the Celtics roster, the Celtics lineup right now, and possibly what role he could fill as regular season games gear up in the Orlando bubble soon with Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports. He covers the Celtics for the Forbes website. We'll head to a break. We're back with more. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Monday program. Chris Grinham, he covers the Boston Celtics for Forbes Sports, and he joins us right now on this program. Chris, Romeo Langford in the scrimmages so far. He did not play Friday due to a stomach issue, but he had a pretty solid game last night in the 12 minutes he logged for the Celtics, getting some points and was very active. And in fact, you've had some good things to report about his defensive efficiency or defensive rating from the game yesterday. And so for Romeo, who's trying to restart with the rest of the Celtics in the NBA, I think after one scrimmage in the books, we've got to think maybe he can work his way into some time as the Celtics get going again.
Yeah, I mean, he showed before the season was suspended that he can impact the game, especially defensively, at a high level for the Celtics. And I think as these seeding games begin and as teams get into the playoffs, a lot of these teams that are going to potentially make deep runs like the Celtics are going to look toward their depth to shine, because guys aren't in, you know, high-level game shape at this point. They've been sitting around for 3.5 months. And so a guy like Romeo Langford is really important. And he showed yesterday he can come off the bench and give you a nice burst on both ends of the floor. You know, 9 points in a short 12-minute span yesterday. He made some nice cuts away from the ball and was really good defensively. I mean, he had the best defensive rating game-wide yesterday. He has the Celtics' best defensive rating as of, you know, when the season was suspended in early March. So, you know, Brad Stevens trusts him. It's clear the Celtics trust him. So he's going to see some action down the stretch for sure.
Chris, we know that Coach Stevens, even going back to his time here in Indiana at Butler, we know he's a metrics-based guy. And so much of basketball, especially the NBA and even high-level Division I ball, there are so many metrics available to coaches nowadays and so many different ways to see the game and to rate their team and to know who's performing in other areas where years ago we maybe didn't have that technology to do. When you tweet out things like Romeo Langford had a defensive rating of 56.7 in 12 minutes yesterday, the best of anyone on the floor, I have to believe that the better he scores in some of those things, not just his points, not just his defensive ability, not just how he looks on the floor, but some of those metrics, ratings, scorings, Coach Steven and the NBA staff, all these teams are looking at that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, without question. I mean, defensive rating and offensive rating has kind of emerged over the last couple of years as a pretty popular metric to keep an eye on because it's a kind of an all-seeing eye on one side of the ball, if you want to focus on that. A long time ago, guys would look at, steals and blocks. And realistically, those aren't very telling metrics of if a guy is having a successful game defensively, because a guy like Romeo isn't guarding, the other team's point guard most of the time. So he's not going to be picking guys' pockets and coming up with three or four steals a night on the stat sheet. So you got to look at some of those advanced metrics. But Romeo on both sides of the ball does a really good job of placing himself in the right spot to be successful. He's figuring out where he needs to place himself at the pro level to find success. And that off-ball movement has really helped him find his success. I mean, when he played mid to early February, he had a stretch where he was playing double-digit minutes basically every night for the Celtics. His off-ball movement was extremely well placed. It was smart, and Brad Stevens is someone who really picks up on that. And that sort of stuff is what shines through with a defensive rating, because if your off-ball placement is smart, you're going to be a disruptor on the defensive end for the opponent, and it's going to be tougher for them to score. And if they're not scoring, that's going to reflect nicely on your defensive rating. So, Brad and a lot of, NBA staff definitely pay attention to some of those advanced metrics, but I think a guy like Romeo, who might not fill the steals and blocks category, it's a nice way to say and, really show, he's providing a really solid impact on the defensive end.
Chris Grinham, he covers the Boston Celtics for Forbes Sports, joining me as we talk about Romeo Langford and the restart of the NBA in Orlando. Within the Celtics, who, and I've had this question before, but who is Romeo really competing with for minutes off the bench? Who are some of the chief players that in his position or that area of the game that he is competing with for minutes as this thing restarts?
Yeah, it's tough to tell because, he was a guy, like we've talked about in the past, he was bouncing around from the G League back up to Boston occasionally for the first half of the season, and then he dealt with some injury problems. So it's tough to kind of tell who he's really competing with, if he is competing with anyone, because as a wing, a guard slash wing, he's kind of in a bit of a log jam in Boston. The Celtics have a lot of good wings, whether you're looking at guys like Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, more of a guard, but he can kind of play defensively at any level. Then you have another rookie on the roster in Grant Williams, who thrives on the defensive end as well, kind of similar to, the way Romeo has made his living, I guess you could say, on the defensive end during his hefty minutes with Boston. Grant Williams plays in a much bigger game. But I think the one person to really focus on, oddly enough, is probably Gordon Hayward, and not for the reason that Romeo is going to probably steal minutes from Gordon Hayward, but if the Celtics do make a deep run into the playoffs here and come early September, they're still hanging around, Gordon Hayward's likely going to have to leave the bubble because his wife is due with their fourth child, and that's going to open up some major minutes, especially on the defensive end, for Romeo to jump in and take. Gordon Hayward is a good scorer. He averages 17 points a game. Everyone knows he can score the basketball, but he does provide a lot of defensive versatility on that wing for the Celtics. Romeo is someone on the bench who has that length similar to Gordon, and he's quick enough along the perimeter where he can kind of hang with a lot of the guys that Gordon Hayward might match up against. Maybe not on the larger end when you move up in size, but definitely on the quicker end. And so I think you got to look at what Gordon Hayward does defensively for the Celtics to kind of see what Romeo Langford could do in the postseason for Boston. Because if Gordon Hayward does have to leave when his wife ultimately has their fourth child, that's going to be a major opportunity for Romeo Langford. And I think there's it's very likely that comes to fruition.
So when we get to more meaningful games, obviously everything counts once we get past these scrimmages. And you mentioned the seeding games and then, of course, the playoffs for the Celtics. We can expect Romeo, with Gordon, without Gordon, to log some off-the-bench minutes for this team, even in some of the more key postseason games.
Yeah, I would expect that. I mean, Brad Stevens said yesterday that defensively, his quote was, defensively he's been good and he's going to be in the mix to play, especially with certain matchups and certain games. So it's clear the Celtics already have him worked into certain game plans. I mean, you saw earlier in the year, he was playing double-digit minutes against the Lakers. I mean, that's a marquee matchup. That's one of the best teams in the NBA. And they trusted Romeo to be out there. I think a lot of it has to do with the quickness of an opponent. Romeo's versatility defensively and his footwork defensively has, turned into pretty good results for the Celtics in the past against quicker backcourts and maybe deeper backcourts. And so if they can trust him against certain, maybe smaller opponents, I want to say, but good teams, I think you're definitely going to see that. And Brad Stevens, talking to us yesterday, made it very clear that he's done a good job. And they trust him to be out there, and he's already worked into their game plans against certain teams.
Absolutely. Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports, he covers the Celtics. Let's talk before we go here, final couple minutes, about the bubble so far. You're around the game. I know you're not in Orlando now, but again, you cover the Celtics all the time and are around this franchise in many ways. What are your thoughts on the bubble and the opportunity it has to be successful, so some of these key games and playoff games that we're talking about, we actually get to see happen?
Well, I think it's a fascinating concept. I mean, just stuffing 22 teams down in Walt Disney World, kind of a fascinating plan. And I was interested to see how it played out. I mean, I think you have certainly positive results at the moment with the first round of tests coming back and no positive tests. So that's huge. In that sense, the bubble is working. The games themselves, I've been pretty impressed with the level of play. I entered this bubble scenario with rather low expectations. You had a lot of guys who hadn't dribbled a basketball since March until they got back to their home facilities over the last month. And so they're working off not any game shape. They're still kind of a little rusty. But I thought the level of play in the first couple games has been relatively good. Defensively, the Celtics definitely need some improvements. But those are all tweaks that they can work out. And again, all the tweaks aren't going to be worked out when the seeding games begin. Those early couple seeding games are still going to be used to get back into game shape, get some rust off their shoulders and kind of, figure things out. But I think it's been pretty successful. I think the Celtics have a chance to be successful because they're a deeper team, they're a closer team, and like I said earlier, that depth is going to be really important because you don't really know how injuries are going to play out. It's a really exhausted schedule in August as the playoffs start to ramp up, so you might see some injuries with guys having to ramp up their activity very quickly. So that depth is certainly going to come into play, and I think that bodes well for the Celtics.
Absolutely. Chris Grinham of Forbes Sports, thanks for the chat on Romeo and the Celtics, and that wraps it up for this Monday program. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.